This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 12:16. This is Nation Radio. We're around until 2 o'clock today. It's definitely feels like hockey season right now. A little bit of snow going on. Still, the temperature is ridiculous. Love this winter. If we could have this kind of winter every year, I would really appreciate it. As I get older, I really appreciate the lack of really cold weather. If we could arrange that, I would love it very much. And there's a couple things I wanted to get to that happened on the Oilers Nation blog in the last couple of days that I thought were very cool. So we're going to talk about something that Jason Greger wrote and also Robin Brownlee wrote. They wrote two different articles about Alish Hemsky on the 2nd of December, which is, what, yesterday? Something like that. And they both were really looking at, you know, what do you do with a guy who has all world skill and is not really performing at a level where if you decide to trade him, you're going to get the kind of full value you want for a veteran like that. And then the other thing, you know, are you going to keep this guy? Because right now, what's the contract range you'd be looking at? Obviously, Alish Hemsky isn't going to want to sign for a discount. But if you're the Oilers, this is a gentleman who's had injuries, talking about the shoulder. Gene Principe tweeted not long ago that he's had some difficulties, although it's coming along. And this is an issue that's been an issue for a long time for the Oilers and Alish Hemsky's shoulder situation and injury situation. So both articles, I encourage you to read them online. They're right at Oilers Nation. They really, not necessarily called into question, but talked about a sense of urgency for Alish Hemsky and maybe that you know, something had to happen, had to go out and do something good. Well, he did, and it took to the third period, and, you know, I thought he played very well. He big hit, obviously helped in, chipped in on the offense, and played really well. And that's the kind of guy that Alish Hemsky can be. Now every night, that's a bit much, but he does seem to be finding some chemistry now with Horkoff and Sam Gagne on left wing. And I thought it was very interesting because sometimes, you know, impatience and that sort of thing with players, and we all do it. But when you're dealing as an organization in a contract, I mean, I love Alish Hemsky. I think he's a wonderful hockey player. Honestly, what kind of a contract would you sign him to? You don't want to mortgage the future because you've got Hall and Nugent Hopkins and Eberle and others coming up, and that's your core group. How much are you willing to spend on Alish Hemsky? You know, $5 million? I don't know. Good question. We'll talk to Jason about that in just a couple of minutes. And then Ryan Jones went out and scored 3 goals in the third period, too. And I had, over a period of, like, I would suggest a year or so, gained the reputation of being, you know, somewhat down on Ryan Jones as a player. Not really true. I just think that as a role in the top six, that was expecting a little much. However, that was based on statistics that we'd seen and advanced stats we'd seen in the previous year. This year, Ryan Jones is playing, I don't know if people realize it, out of sight, and not just in the goal scoring department, but he's got a Corsi Rel, if you're familiar with what Corsi is and Corsi Rel is, a plus 2.8, and that's with a zone start of 38% offense. So basically, he's starting uphill, he's starting in his own zone for his zone start. Behind the net, Gabe Desjardins' great sight tells us that he's playing with, you know, average or below average line mates overall. Now, obviously, he was playing with the big line there for a while, but there's been situations where he's playing with the third, fourth line guys, and he's obviously posting not just goals, but he's posting well offensively, and with that Corsi Rel, the puck's going in the right direction. So, you know, aside from the fact that most people's projections about Ryan Jones offensively have been off this year, there's also the fact that he's really playing well. He's helping out. It's obvious if you watch him on the ice. I think that he talked to Robin Brownlee. Robin mentions in one of his articles, in fact, it's the one that says Ryan Jones go with the flow, that he did work very hard defensively and improving himself over the summer and as he entered into full year two with the Edmonton Oilers. And it's very obvious. This is a guy who's gone out and done the hard work, and it's paid off, and he's playing very, very well. And almost no matter how you project it, there's always luck involved in line mates and that. But this is a guy who's been a godsend for the Edmonton Oilers, who, quite frankly, have had, you know, high level performances from some players and some of the wingers that might have been expected to score more. You know, we might include Magnus Pajarvi in that, not to pick on him, but that's a player. Sam Gagne, who's playing the wing. has had a little bit of a difficult time. So there's a little bit of that going on with some of the wingers, and Ryan Jones has really picked up the slack. So I thought that was interesting that over on Oilers Nation the last couple of days, a few articles have been not only just bang on, but really kind of anticipating that third period last night, and it was a wild third period. A lot of stories coming out of that in the newspaper today and on radio today. Ladislav Smead's big goal now, and he's a big-time player. And really the third period, one of the things that didn't get discussed, I thought was somewhat important, is that Dubnyk survived that game. You know, he shot, I think it was 36 out of 39 shots that he stopped, but he played well. Some juicy rebounds, but you'd expect that because as a guy who's playing, you know, he's a little bit rusty right now. He doesn't play as much. He's in a kind of a, definitely a backup rotation. And really, he's been playing, when the Oilers play two nights in a row, he's playing the first or the second game. But other than that, Tom Rennie is, you know, running with the veteran, and why not? Hobby Bullen's playing well. But I think as we move forward that it might be an idea to get Devan Dubnyk into a few more games based on his play last night, because I think that he had a, at least from my point of view, I think he had a little bit of a rough night going on with some of the rebounds. We also talked about Ryan Whitney as well, and his play backed off a little bit as far as time on ice is concerned. I think a lot of that has to do with a very, very good power play, but it was some kind of night for Whitney and the entire gang, and certainly the stars of the show were Ryan Jones and some secondary scoring from some other folks too, and Ladislav Smead with that big howitzer from the blue line that found Twine, and now he's got two goals this year already, and we're not even at the 30-game mark. It's 12:22, and we welcome from Team 1260 Radio Afternoon Drive Guy from the Jason Gregor Show. Jason, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. That was some kind of third period last night.
Well, it was, yeah. The Edmonton Oilers, probably the most energetic they played in a while. You do wonder if Columbus, a little bit fatigued, maybe having played in Calgary and went to overtime the previous night. But, you know, full marks for the Oilers, and I think the key will be tonight ensuring that they're not like Columbus was last night and fatigued in the third when they take on Calgary.
Yeah, I noticed that it seemed to me, though, that Coach Rennie was running the fourth line a lot during the game, certainly in the first two periods last night. Maybe that was in an effort to make sure that he had some fresh troops tonight as well.
Well, you look at you know, Nugent Hopkins and Eberle that have really carried this team, I think, in the first 25 games. You know, the best part was that, you know, they didn't have to rely on them in the third period. And I think that was the key. Eventually, if this team's ever going to stay in the hunt, you needed Alex Hemsky to expect a hat trick from him. I think that's his first ever multi-goal game of his career, never mind a hat trick.
But, yeah.
You know, it was that was key for the Oilers. And, you know, Ryan Jones now 9 goals in the season. And it's funny. I had a lot of debates with people. You know, some guys who believe in certain statistics. I love stats. I believe in a lot of them, but there's certain ones where you start accounting for that you're going to rip a guy based on his line mates. I'm sorry. I don't buy into that whatsoever. And, you know, Ryan Jones, granted, he's well ahead of the pace, but this is a guy who in his 3 years, granted, didn't play two full seasons in his first 2 years, but he's a guy who's averaged around, 15 to 18 goals if you prorate it over a season. And I'm not surprised he's had production. I'm surprised he's on pace for whatever it is, 28 goals. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, Jones's game is very simple. He's not a flashy guy, but he goes to the tough areas. And most goal scorers nowadays, unless you're Sidney Crosby or Ovechkins or, you know, Corey Perry, or Eberle or Nugent Hopkins, most of your goals have to be garbage goals.
Well, and the thing about the goals last night, that first goal, the first one in the third period for him that tied it, that was a huge goal for the Oilers because they looked like they'd come out with some energy, but once that goal was scored, you really kind of felt like, you know, it was only a matter of time, right?
Well, to me, Ryan Jones is probably a kind of a bargain of a Ryan Smith is how I look at his style of game, you know, excluding all the hair jokes and everything like that. You know, you look at his game, it's somewhat similar. He's not as good as Ryan Smith as far as deflecting pucks in front of the net and is great on the wall. But, you know, that move last night that he scored in that first goal where he gets the puck and a very quick, hard wraparound that doesn't allow the goaltender, you know, that's a vintage Ryan Smith goal. You know, if Jones can be that guy for the Oilers, it's an ugly goal scorer. I'll tell you, he'll take a guy who can score you ugly 20 to 23 goals every year.
For sure. You wrote, and we talked about this before you came on with us today, Jason, you wrote about Alex Hemsky yesterday afternoon and about the fact that, you know, this is a guy who needs to show well. He's in a contract year, and you're not going to get full price for him if you trade him, and yet how on earth can you sign the guy to a big contract based on injury and performance? He really played well in the third period.
Well, the thing that impressed me the most, actually, about Hemsky last night was, you know, sure, he got that late goal, but, you know, the thing that he showed more energy and effort. And, you know, we had debated that he just looked like his body language is either lacking in confidence or more so just lacking in the drive necessary to score in the NHL level. It's not, you can't just win on skill. And, you know, Hemsky delivered some big hits last night, which is really not what you expect from Alex Hemsky. And I've never questioned his fear factor, right? Mm-hmm. That's probably caused him to get injured at times. He goes into tough areas. He never backs down from anybody. But we hadn't seen that yet this year. And last night, you know, great for him to get a goal, and I'm sure that helps his confidence. But I just liked his battle level last night. It was a lot higher than I'd seen. The other thing was he was shooting a lot more. Now, he did pass up a glorious chance in the second period that he didn't shoot, and you're thinking, oh, here we go. But after that, he was firing on all cylinders. I think it finally clicked that he's like, because I watched when he came off the bench, Tom Rennie leaned down to him and, you know, didn't say anything, but I think he just politely said, Alex, shoot the puck.
Yeah.
And after that, you know, we saw him taking some slap shots. And it's not about scoring. It's just about you start releasing those pucks, and then eventually you'll get a lucky one that squirts through the goaltender, you know, like Ryan Jones seems to get a lot of the time. And that'll build your confidence.
You know, Gene Principe tweeted today, I quote from Hemsky after the game last night, saying that he'd been dealing with some things and hadn't been shooting because of his shoulder being a little sore, but was getting better. That leads me into my next question, Jason. If you're thinking about a contract for this guy moving forward, and you're the Edmonton Oilers, what kind of range would you even start at? I mean, you can't sign him for less than he's making because he's a valuable player. But with his injury risk, where's the happy medium contract rise with Alex Hemsky?
Well, I guess it's a good question. Technically, you could, after July 1st, if you wanted to sign him and he becomes an unrestricted free agent, you don't have to offer him 10%, right?
So, right.
And they could go to him and say, we'll sign you to a five-year deal at a cap hit of 3.4, for instance, and, you know, away you go. But, you know, I think Alex Hemsky's probably someone who's a 2 or 3 year contract right now, both for him and for the team, because even when that contract's done, he'd still only be 30 years of age, mm-hmm. right? So he could still have a big contract afterwards because, you know, and I'd mentioned it in my article. I thought Hemsky was maybe a little bit hesitant, and I would understand why. When you've been off and on the IR as often as he has, and I think he's probably rushed back and not played at 100%, you know, and I think it's, you know, the NHL, the philosophy, it started with the concussions, Alan, but I honestly believe we're finally shedding a little bit of the machoism from players and even from the organization to think, oh, this guy's 70%, he can play, right?
Yeah.
Like playoffs, sure, guys will take cortisone shots, they'll do whatever it takes, and I understand. But in the regular season, when you have guys coming back and, you know, 10 days can make a big extra difference in strength and mental toughness and how confident you feel. And I honestly believe they're starting to do that. And Hemsky, I think, while he waited long, he came back, he still probably played a little hesitant. And last night, to me, once he delivers that first hit and then comes off and doesn't feel anything, then he all of a sudden feels better.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we saw from him. There's a lot of the mental part of the game that none of us, you know, anybody can really put we can't do a statistical data on it. We can't even do if you're from the, well, I saw camp. It all depends on which side you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that can ever put a value on how their mental state is and how physically healthy they are. You don't really know because the NHL is the worst league for being protective of bumps and bruises. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's funny you mention that because this week, one of the great gritty Oiler wingers, Mike Greer, retired. And one of my longest serving memories of him is, popping his shoulder out on a hit and then going back to the bench and getting it popped back in. And then he'd never miss a shift.
Yeah, that was kind of old school times, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a lot of guys who did that. But Greer, he was so muscle-bound that it didn't pop back in easily. I had a guy I played hockey with in junior, Rob Bernstad, and he used to do that on the bench, I remember. And, you know, for 30 seconds, it kind of turned white, and the assistant coach would pop it back in. He'd wait 3 or 4 minutes and go back and play. And you're kind of like, what the hell? But after a while, you know, he'd say, well, it's just, it pops out, but once it's back in, then it feels fine, right? So
yeah.
It is a different thing now. There's way more money at stake, and, you know, some guys have a higher pain threshold than others. You're never going to gauge that. Jason Smith had it. Kevin Lowe had it. Mike Greer has it. Ryan Smith, I think, at times has definitely shown that, that he's a guy who will play through a lot of pain. And some guys just have a higher pain threshold than others.
Yeah. Before we get off last night's game, I just want to talk about Laddie Smead a little bit. Now, his goal is getting all kinds of attention, and he's tweeting out some brilliant stuff. But this is a guy who maybe took a little while to mature as a player, but he is as steady as a rock back there on the Oilers' blue line now.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mentioned it when he scored that goal. I said, if Ladislav Schmid is going to legitimately become a top four defenseman, you've got to expect 5 goals a year at least. You can't be, you know, a top four defenseman playing 20-some minutes a night every game and scoring 1 goal every 2 years, right? Like,
right.
And it's funny. I talked to Schmid about it. He finally admitted that, you know, for the last few years in his career, because when you're drafted 9th overall, you know, and you have aspirations of coming into the NHL, he said, I want to be a puck-moving defenseman. And I think he really fought with the fact that not everybody can come to the NHL and be a puck-moving defenseman. It's hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
yep.
The funny thing is, now that he's accepted, you know what, I'm going to be a solid, steady, stay-at-home defenseman, that's normally when the offense starts to come a little bit, right? And Schmid does have it in his repertoire because that's the type of defenseman he was before he got to the NHL. And I think now you'll probably see him, you know, chip in with, you know, 4 or 5 goals a year. I'm not expecting him to ever reach double digits because he's never on the power play. And, that, you know, that's it's hard for a defenseman to score that many even-strength goals in the course of the year. But if you're playing that often, you need that from Ladislav Schmid. You know, he gets a little more confidence. It's amazing what confidence will do for a player, even in the defensive end, how that translates to the offensive end.
Yeah, you know, Jason Smith used to put up 20, 25 points a year, too. You're right. That's a good point.
Yeah, like you have to have that. When you're a 20-minute-a-night defenseman, you can't just be one-dimensional, right? Like the one-dimensional offensive defenseman, Marc-Andre Bergeron, score you 40-some points, right? So mm-hmm. you've got to find a balance. And I think with Schmid now, it's amazing because there's a lot of people that, oh, he's a bust, he's a write-off. It's a tough position to learn. It's a tough position to play. You know, it's taken Tom Gilbert this long to become, a lot more consistent. You know, nobody even talked about it. Tom Gilbert, Jason Smith, the national predator at the Oilers blue line the other day, I almost fell out of the press box, right? Like he's adding different elements to his game. And a lot of that just comes from guys have confidence. They start to feel a little bit stronger, a little bit more confident in their ability. And all of a sudden they do things that you probably wouldn't expect just because they feel more confident in doing a lot of different elements.
Speaking with Jason Greger from Jason Greger's show right here on Team 1260, 2 to 6 every weekday afternoon. This is Nation Radio. Jason, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, a lot of talk about him over the last couple of weeks and comparing him all rookie since Yzerman, basically. In style, it's hard to stay away from Gretzky comparisons just because there's a lot of similarities in size and how they see the ice and the passing. In performance, he's on track to be one of the best rookies over the last 35 years. Did anyone, and I'm trying to find someone, I didn't, did anybody think he'd have this kind of impact that you can recall before training camp?
No. There's nobody who thought that, you know, he was going to be a point-of-game player. No one in their right mind. You know, there were some people who thought, okay, 55 points was likely. I do find it interesting. There was a lot of guys who then crunched numbers, and which is great. But, you know, well, he's never going to score at the NHL level because he wasn't a scorer. And I constantly told people, I said, look at who he played with in Red Deer. He scored 106 points with nobodies. I'm sorry. I don't care if they were 19-year-old WHLers. They were guys who weren't remotely talented. You look at the numbers Sam Gagne or Taylor Hall or other guys who score 100 points, and look at their line mates and teammates and other guys. He had none of that in Red Deer whatsoever. Yeah. And, you know, he put up ridiculous numbers. And, Jordan Eberle has some of the sweetest hands we've seen in Edmonton, in a long, long time. And, you know, Nugent Hopkins, how we see, like, that pass on the power play last night was ridiculous. And, you know, Eberle's finish, it's right upstairs. He doesn't shoot to put it on net. He shoots to score. And, you know, that's going to be a lethal combination. And, you know, you factor in Taylor Hall when he gets back in. And, you know, I think even in a few years when a guy like Magnus Pjärvi maybe finds his game and matures a little bit at the NHL level, that Nugent Hopkins, you surround him with other elite players, man, it makes him even better. But him himself, it's been a revelation. Yeah, no one in the right mind. No one thought Patrick Kane would score 72 points coming out of junior, and And last I checked, Kane and Crosby were the only two 18-year-old rookies in the last 25 years to get over, I think it's 62 yeah. points or 63 because Jeff Skinner did it last year. So
I think you're right.
If he gets over 70 points, Al, he'd put himself in very elite category. And I asked Ryan Whitney yesterday, because he is a rookie with when Crosby was a rookie, and now he's here with Nugent Hopkins, and asked him to compare. He said their vision's identical, but they're completely different games.
Yeah.
Crosby was quick and powerful. He says Nugent Hopkins is much more cerebral, sees the ice. And Ben Eager said that Nugent Hopkins better as a rookie than Patrick Kane was.
Wow. You know, the thing about Ryan Nugent Hopkins that slays me is that he is brilliant on the power play. The power play for rookies is usually death. Even the good ones, they don't perform at a high level. This kid is, you know, he's driving the bus. Hemsky's secondary, Gagner's secondary, they're all secondary. This guy is making butter passes at 18.
It's scary to think what he'll be like in a few years. But you know what? He's got confidence. He got off to a good start, I think, which was key. And that confidence element, none of us can equate to it. And it's like that way in everyday life. You know what? If you're a young single guy and you got some confidence, you can talk to any girl in the bar, right? And if you get shut down all the time, eventually you lose your confidence. It's no different than on the ice, and it's just how it works. And, you know, the one thing is his vision, his ability. The thing that impresses me the most about Nugent Hopkins is you watch him when he stick handles the puck, how he moves 2 to 4 inches, and that gives him that extra half second, right? Yeah. He pulls the puck into himself. The defender lunges. Now the defender can't get him. He's got an extra half second. Boom, makes that perfect pass through the seam. And that, to me, is the most impressive part of his game. The other thing is, how many of his goals have been right around the crease?
Yeah.
He's not scared to go to the areas to score goals.
No, for
That's
sure.
That's what impresses me as well. I mean, it's been impossible not to be impressed by the guy, and he's clearly heads above any other rookie right now in the NHL, even though Adam Henrique had a pretty good month. He had 14 points for the New Jersey Devils, but it's just, it's every element of his game, like that spinorama goal that led to Jordan Eberle when he spun off the defender off the wall, Eberle scores, and then that pass last night. And the best news for the Oilers was Nugent Hopkins and Eberle didn't have to do anything in the third period, and they scored 5 goals.
I just always go back to that Sutton pass. When guys like Sutton are passing the puck like that, everybody's going. It's all rolling now.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, Andy Sutton's another guy who has come in here, and he's been light years better than Curtis Foster.
Yeah,
right?
For
like,
sure.
Just in the toughness element. Just in the locker room, how he jokes around with the guys. I watch how he interacts with everyone. He's a really friendly guy. And, you know, he's tough, of course. You know, I think even though he got suspended, you know, rolling out after Gabriel Landeskog is something the Oilers haven't had in a while. And I think, you know, Theo Pekka will learn a lot from Andy Sutton, because while Sutton doesn't have the best foot speed, he's got very quick feet, and that's why he's always been a pretty good open ice hitter. And Peckham's got similar traits, as does Colton Tubert.
Before we let you go, Jason, one last one on the Brian Burke, Kevin Lowe barn-raising item. I would pick Vish in that fight. How do you feel about Brian Burke against Kevin Lowe?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting about that scenario, right? Because I think, you know, while it's funny, I don't really understand what Brian Burke, I think sometimes he just can't help himself, because I'm not sure how a lot of people know the fact that, you know, his son had asked him, you know what, Dad, you got to get rid of having these grudges. You know, you got to be a better human being. When his son passed away, very quickly, that's why he said, you know what? And that's why he called to mend the fence with Kevin Lowe. And I don't think he's trying to reopen that by any stretch, but I'm really not understanding why you would bring it up now. Because the other thing I do know is, well, he said, it's interesting, if you listen to his clip, he said, well, you know what? How Kevin Lowe called me out in a fight on radio. That's not how you do it. You call the guy instead of time. Well, guess what? He never called Kevin Lowe. He said he called Glenn Sather. So he's kind of ripping on Lowe for saying, well, he called me out on the radio. Well, what did Brian Burke do? He went to his butt. Hey, tell your friend I want to fight him. You knew his number. If you really wanted to meet him at the barn, why didn't you go out and do it? I think it'd be more exciting to have a Joe Capp, Moscow, Brian Burke, Kevin Lowe tag team match, right? Now, that you'd probably have to put Lowe and Moscow together, because Burke and Moscow, probably similar body size types, and then Capp and Kevin Lowe. But everybody saw what Joe Capp did to Angelo Moscow.
Yeah.
I would probably take Kevin Lowe similar to doing the same thing to Brian Burke, if I had to pick. It's obviously a great hypothetical. You know, I don't think they'd ever do it. But I watched Kevin Lowe play, and, he wasn't the best fighter, per se.
Yeah.
When you're in a street, the thing about Kevin Lowe was, they called him Sid Vicious because he was cheap and he was dirty when he played.
Mm-hmm.
When you fight guys, I don't think Kevin Lowe would get in the ring and be all, this is, if this is a barn fight, And yep. I've seen a few, to be honest. Being in a farm guy, I've seen a few bush party fights. If guys square up man-to-man, it's not like there's a lot of rules here. You just fight to win. And if you got to kick the guy in the junk, whatever you got to do to win, then you win. And so something would tell me I would take Kevin Lowe in that aspect.
Well, I think Mosca hands the cane to Lowe, and it's all over in about 3 minutes.
I'm not sure if you're a big CFL guy, Al, but I love the CFL.
Oh, me too.
That just adds to the folklore. I love that thing. That tape will be showed for a long time. And, you know, there is a rivalry that you don't really see anymore.
No.
And that's why I hope Gary Bettman, not to get off topic here, when they go to realignment, I hope we go back to four divisions of hockey and you name the four divisions. I don't care what you want to name it, Lemieux, Gretzky, or Richard. I don't care. Have four of them so we can see some repeat year after year. Why did Edmonton and Dallas hate each other? Because they played every year in the playoffs.
Oh, man. It was brutal.
And could you imagine if Oilers fans, and most of them, if you're under the age of 25, you've never really experienced the Battle of Alberta, ever.
No, that's true. You're right. You know, it's like I still hate Mike Keane, and I understand he's a nice guy, but I can't like him because of the Dallas-Edmonton rivalry over those years.
Oh, well, you know what? To me, I go back when I was a real diehard Oilers fan, and in the 80s, like, you go down, like, Jim, you have respect for those guys, but, man, like, you couldn't stand Theron Fleury. Like, Oilers fans hate him. Like, even when Marty McSorley lost his marbles and speared Mike Bullard, Oilers fans were like, yeah, well, Bullard deserved it. You know, like, you convinced yourself that he deserved it somehow. That's what was great about it.
Jason, thanks for this, man.
Anytime, Al.
Oh, hey, by the way, are you on TV tomorrow?
Yeah, I will be. I will be there at 9:15 with Shane Jones. Should be a lot of fun.
All right, thanks, Jason.
Okay,
Jason Greger from the Jason Greger Show, 2 to 6 every weekday, right here on Team 1260. And of course, he's got a little Sunday TV gig too, in which he does very well. Very insightful guy and interesting stuff. And we covered a lot of territory there, and we thank him very much for that. Now it's 12:42. Coming up, we've got Dean Bélanger from Jets Nation. We're going to talk, go around the Canucks and Leafs and what they've got going on as well in the next half hour. So please stay tuned. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.